Welcome to Glassbreakers Cafe, the podcast where we meet with impactful leaders to get their wisdom and insight on the future, leadership, and career development. Our goal is to inspire you and empower you to live an unlimited and smart future by breaking free from limiting beliefs, firefightings, and the invisible walls of our society. I'm your host, Cindy Mongeni, future of work expert, diversity accelerator, executive coach, and international speaker. Welcome to Glassbreakers Cafe, a space where we meet with impactful leaders to get their wisdom and insight on the future, leadership, and career development. Our special guest today is Tim Merriman, who is partner at NAI Miami, a commercial real estate brokerage firm. Welcome, Tim.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Tim, you are the only Black person who is partner at a commercial real estate brokerage firm, I believe, in the entire South Florida region, right?
As of right now, it's possibly the Southeastern United States.
Oh, wow. Southeast United States.
And let me qualify. That's of a nationally and internationally branded firm. So there are some smaller independent firms, but when you look at a large firm, no. I think the statistics in commercial real estate altogether, you only find 1.3% of all commercial real estate brokers being African-American men. The number of actual that participate in ownership nationwide is 0.002%. So that's where we are. And yes, I absolutely want more diversity because I find this is a career that is extremely rewarding.
And so I imagine you didn't have a lot of Black role models in this space when you were growing up. So what led you to this industry and how did you manage to not only be part of the industry, but becoming a partner in the industry?
It started sometime in 2008 while I was in grad school. I was doing an MBA at that time. My grad school offered an MBA with a concentration in real estate and development. I also had mentors as well as family members who were playing on the residential rental home side. I had one of my mentors who owned a small apartment building. And I sat there and I started really thinking, what could I do to also put my own self in that position, possibly acquire something? During one of my classes, the professor said, don't wait to get this degree to get in commercial real estate. Go ahead and start seeking out opportunities. He said, contrary to what you guys think, you don't need it. It'll make you better, but you don't absolutely need it. So I went home and started getting on the internet and started searching for jobs with some of the major developers. And as I did, so I was looking for project engineer. At that time, they were making 120, 130. And I'm like, okay, that's what I want. And as I went through all the listings, I sat there and saw something with this outrageous figure of you could make anywhere from $100,000 to $1 million a year. And I was like, oh, okay, now let me go and see what this is. So I started doing my research and I'm like, wait, you mean to tell me that the guy who oversees the development gets paid $120,000, $130,000, but the guy who actually sells it could actually get paid $500,000, $600,000? Now that was before I understood about the internal splits and how we split, you know, all those fees. But I found that very interesting. So I started looking at YouTube channels. I started doing, research, trying to find out exactly what it is. And then I realized, you mean to tell me the same way realtors make 6% on selling a $100,000 home, there's a guy out there making 6% on selling a $10 million shopping center? Let me check that out. That's what sold me on it. So I then went and started applying for jobs and I got 3 callbacks. First place, absolutely scared me to death. Talking about the opposite of diversity, I walked in a room and there must have been 100 people. Imagine everyone looked the opposite of me. Everyone was real thin, they were blonde hair, blue eye, and it was absolutely intimidating. And I'm like, not so sure. Looked at another brokerage. They just seemed a little all over the place. I got picked up by a small brokerage with a proven track record out of California on Brickell Avenue. For about 8 months, I trekked down. And that's when I sat there and I saw people who were actually doing it, and I was even more sold on it. That's how I got into commercial real estate. And I had no earthly idea what I had jumped into, but I knew that there was something great about it, and I wanted to be a part of it.
Awesome. And I can feel your passion. So you're still passionate. This starting in 2008, we're at 2021, and you're still like full of passion for the industry.
Oh, absolutely.
And so now you're convinced, you've been sold, you're starting in the industry, but how did you make to be partner? Because there is like a gap between not everybody is able to do it and being one of the few people of color. So
that's another interesting question. Everything I did was absolutely probably counterintuitive, and I took the hardest road possible. So in August of 2008, the brokerage that I worked for on Brickell Avenue in Miami was acquired by NAI Miami. They wanted a strong commercial sales division. I came over with 13 people. What happened was we had senior brokers who were supposed to be training us. That wasn't happening. One by one, each junior, because of the financial stress, dropped off. I kept showing up for an additional 2 years, making absolutely no money. When I tell you, I tell anyone, The Pursuit of Happiness, that movie with Will Smith.
Yes.
Okay, that was my life for 2.5, 3 years. It was just like that, where I kept getting in the car. I'm running out of money. I'm trying to figure out, but I knew. And I would get on the phone periodically with one of my mentors who was in real estate, but he also owned another company. And he had a PhD from Johns Hopkins. And he was like, no, I got a feeling. You're supposed to be here. This is what you're supposed to be doing. And I would sit there and I'd go to my car, I'd call him on the phone, tell him what I was going to. He says, that's okay. Do this, go back upstairs. That's what kept me going back. And finally, I got down to the point where 12 of the 13 were gone. I was the only person continuing to show up.
Wow.
The president of the firm took pity on me, called me in one day, sat me down, and he says, you know what? You keep showing up. Either I'm going to make you really, really rich, or I'm going to fire you. I don't know which one it is yet, but either way, we're going to figure it out. If I sat there and I bought, it was a bad investment to buy this firm, or you by yourself are going to justify the cost. So for about another 2 years, I worked with the president as a directly reporting. And I mean, it was brutal. I would get there at 7:30 in the morning. I wouldn't leave until 8, 9 o'clock at night. I did that 5 days a week, then it would still go in on Saturdays and Sundays. And mind you, I was still in grad school. So I'm still at night having to get my homework. I was married at the time. I had 2 kids. I'm trying to juggle everything. That's how passionate I was about making this work. I sat there, and one day the story happened that I literally walked into my office with $5 in my pocket. It was on a Friday. And I'm looking at how much money I owed, and I was in debt. My ship was sinking. And I remember getting in the car, feeling completely defeated on a Friday evening, starting to drive home, looking at my lifestyle, how it had completely degraded. And for the next 48 hours, I thought about, what did you do? You made a mistake. You're sitting there and you're catching pure you-know-what from the president, because you're messing things up. You're not making a livable income. And I decided at that point, on Sunday afternoon, no one's going to fix my problem. You can get in here, and the only way you're going to fix your financial problem is you take all of your concerns, all of your fears, throw it to the wind, and you go, as they say, balls to the wall. You make it happen. I got on the phone that Monday, and I made all the phone calls that I was scared of making. I did all the transactions and the deals that I was completely, I'm telling you, I was scared to death, but I was really scared of being broke. I was scared of what came behind running out of money. So I made those phone calls. I didn't realize I had enough transactions that were far enough along that all that was holding them up was me. Me in my fear. So what happened? That month, I closed enough deals that I walked out with $40,000. It still was not enough to fix my problem. That's how bad this hole was. The next month, I kept doing the same thing. I closed and I made another, I think, around $27,000, $28,000. And I was very close to fixing my problem. Still wasn't quite there. I continued and never had any more months like that during that time period. But it was enough that it gave me the wiggle room to continue to move forward. And what I started doing was I started really understanding how to put deals together and realized it was my own fear that was getting in my way. And once I realized that the people on the other side of the table had the same fears, they were putting themselves in the same situations, they didn't know have all the answers, it became fun because then I was able to say, you know what? I got real comfortable saying, I don't know, but we'll figure it out. That was my secret. I sat there and thought I had to know everything, and I didn't. Once I got comfortable with that, and I just decided to try each and every day, that's when I started actually making money and becoming successful. That I continued for many, many years, where then as I saw things, money coming in, I then began to start to dream again about all the wonderful things that I could achieve that I thought that I wouldn't be able to do until I was 60, 70, 80 years old if I made it that long. Well, I accomplished them all by 40 years old. And I had to come up with them. That's why I get passionate about this, because it was the one thing that once I got over the fear, I saw the possibilities. And I started to be able to do all the things that I thought that just people like me couldn't do. Being Southern kid from the South, understanding, you know, segregation because it was still existing back then. And then all of a sudden, today. Yes. And it's, listen, I sat there and I said, okay, this is really cool. I really, really like this. And I stuck with it. And then my dreams became bigger. How about not just being a broker and closing million-dollar deals? I started really playing with the idea of what would owning my own brokerage look like? And at one point, I did decide to go out and form my own corporation and get my broker's license. But there was just something that just didn't feel right at the time about walking away. So I eventually dissolved that particular firm and decided to stay. And then about 3 years ago, the conversation started. I wanted to be an inspiration to little kids that looked like me, that sound like me, who had the challenges of that I had, that I could sit there and get them to start to dream the same way I used to dream. And that's when I really wanted to sit there. We started the conversation about the current partners, four original partners of NAI, started wanting to discuss a retirement plan for themselves. Mm-hmm. How do we sit there and we transition from being the owners of this to actually moving into retirement and not having to let all of this, you know, us close our doors and letting all the employees go? That's the conversation that started about 3 years ago. And then in November, it became a reality. We ironed out all the documentation, all the contracts. And then I don't think it's even processed. The fact that I'm now one of the owners who sit in the board meetings, making decisions for things that I never imagined that were going on behind closed doors. But that was how this happened. It was the partners saw that I had a skill set, that I wasn't scared to get my hands dirty. And secretly, it was still a passion of mine not to just be a worker bee, but to actually run something, have my name on the front door, that I could not so much make more money, but to inspire folk that look like us to dream and dream big dreams. Because I will tell you, I have dreamed some really big dreams, and I love the life that I live now because of the way that commercial real estate can compensate you for being good at your job.
This is one of the, I can see the movie of your life. Like, this is like a fascinating story, because also, like, you are a great storyteller. I don't know if you are already doing like speeches, if you are on speaking market, but I can tell you, I can see you, like, you are awesome.
You know, and that was the other thing. I came to terms with what my strengths are. I'm not the most thorough person in writing deals down, but I've realized I've been negotiating since I was a little kid. So I started pulling on my strengths. Most of the deals that I do have stories behind them. So yes, I get lots of practice telling the stories, making things, you know, plausible, telling you the possibilities, getting you excited, being charismatic. And these were things that I already had from previous jobs, previous experiences, and I brought those into commercial real estate. I bring them into all my deals that I do this, and I typically represent sellers with challenging properties. So you have to be able to tell the story. You have to be positive. You have to sit there and say, forget this. Forget what it is right now. But if we do this, this, and this, this is what it can be. And that's when I sat there and I take some of the most challenging properties. I'm talking about things that should be condemned, things that are in the absolute worst part of town. And yeah, I get in my car and I was like, yep, I'll take that. Come on, let's go ahead. I can sell it. And it used to be between my marketing team and myself, a challenge. Let me see if I could actually sell the property before you guys could finish putting the marketing package together. And I would say I'm probably about 50 to 60% there.
Awesome. So let me a bit like do a summary of what like the key point of this amazing story. There was like your strengths, because of course, like each of us, we have our strengths, our gift, our talent. So you were able like to really capitalize, optimize, and grow your strengths of negotiation, storytelling, settings. There is also something that brought my attention, is the power of your words, but like positive words of your teacher at the MBA, telling you like, go and don't wait to get the title. And I think like this is because we know like words can destroy or bring life, and those words bring life to a big dream like you even didn't know at this moment. So I think like this is like fascinating. Also the power of mentorship, because you had people who believed in you, and I believe they were not people of color at this moment. So I think like in this context also to understand like they are like good people also that open doors. And the tenacity, right? Because it was not an easy drive. There was like these big dreams, but at some point, like there was like a hold, and how fears could kill the dream. So I think like this is really a great story, and I'm sure like the audience is going to be inspired and captivated by it. But why? So you've been in this field since 2021, and doing my research, I find not only there is few people of color, but also few women. So why this industry is not more diverse? Why is it so difficult to enter or to be successful?
I think first, the financial commitment. For me to make it for 3 years, and I'll be upfront with you, I cash in all my stocks from previous jobs, my 401k. It takes a huge financial commitment to get through the first 3 years. And a lot of times we're pushed to go to school to get a job. And we get out at 22 years old. Well, guess what? We know that we only have 6 months before the student loans start. And we probably are some of the largest carriers of student loans, you know, percentage-wise. Other races, and I found with other of my contemporaries that I work alongside, well, guess what? They walked out of college. They had no student loans. They had their family understood they're not first generation commercial real estate brokers, or they came from backgrounds where their parents understood the possibilities. So it's like, listen, you can stay home for 3 years. We will foot the bill. We just want to make sure that you understand the big picture, that you're going to go, you know, full force until you make it. The other issue becomes, usually most of my contemporaries are, like I said, second and third generation commercial real estate. They're relying on family relationships. Mm-hmm. We don't have those relationships. So I have to make 4 to 5 more calls. I have to work a little bit longer to come to the table with the same results, because they can call their dad and say, "Dad, do you know?" Or, you know, I'm not from here. You know, a lot of my contemporaries in my office, they grew up in Miami. They went to high school in Miami. They may have gone away for college, but they came back. I didn't do that. That was the other challenge. 50% of this is technical knowledge. The other 50% is relationships. Mm. And a lot of them come to the table where they already have relationships because they've been to private school. They've been, you know, to the camps. They have those relationships where we have to get in those rooms that no one looks like us, find a common ground. Why are we going to connect? Which, that's one of the biggest obstacles. I walk into a lot of rooms where I am the only person of color, but I also walk into rooms where I'm absolutely really intrigued by what I'm doing. So to give you an example, I sat there and for a while, I did competition trap and skeet shooting. Yes. Yeah. And it's funny because you never expect for an African-American, I've been doing this for about 10 years. And you never expect to see a Black guy trap and skeet shooting. Okay. I sit on the board of the Antique Automobile Club of South Florida. And I judge car shows. Guess what? Again, no one looks like me. I'm the youngest person and the only person of color in a car club with 150 people. I found things that I genuinely like, put myself in those positions. And that was the other thing that I find that we have a real challenge with. If we see a room where no one looks like us, we go the other way. Yeah. No. Go in that room, find out what it's about. But I also encourage all of my junior agents, go into the things that you really like. If you're going to volunteer, make sure it's going to be a high net worth individuals in the room, but also make sure that if you're going to sit there and volunteer for Boys and Girls Club, that you're really passionate. If you're going to trap and skeet shoot, that you really do like it, not that you're just doing it just so you can get in the room. If you like cars, boating, whatever it is, make sure that you really like it. And that way you can overcome not having relationships, because guess what? You're going to be in those rooms and you're going to start forging new relationships. That's what I would recommend, as well as how I overcame.
This is fantastic. So there is let's see if we could summarize, because there was a lot of nuggets. And I think at the same time, you gave a lot of your sales secret. So it's being able to be in the room, right? To build the relationship.
Absolutely.
And I think it's also where your communication skills and storytelling and not being afraid to do things that not a lot of people like you were doing before.
Absolutely.
And there is another aspect, I imagine, for you to be able to be a partner and a top selling, to be able to have this opportunity, is to maintain the relationship. Because one thing is to be able to enter the room, and how are you able to maintain the relationship and to grow your network, since you didn't start with a network at the beginning of your career?
One of the things that I found was I forged genuine friendships. So if I don't talk to you, I'm not calling you every month, but I do know who your wife and your kids, or, you know, things that you're passionate about. You can call me at 2 o'clock in the afternoon because you got a flat tire on the side of the road. They're my real friends. I found it was so much easier when I found, you know, I grew up in a car family. So a lot of my clients are car collectors. They will call me because they may be in the Porsche. There's a new Porsche coming out, or I'll look at the phone and they'll sit there. And my passion is Rolls Royce. So they'll sit there and they'll know that a new Rolls Royce is coming out and they'll send it to me. That's how I overcame, where I made genuine connections and we may not even talk about real estate. And guess what? Month after month, they sit there, we call, we do coffee, we talk. Maybe 6 months pass, they see something, I come to top of mind, but they also know I'm genuinely their friend. Call me because not just you're having a problem with commercial real estate, but I also do things as a concierge. So there may be other things that you need. And guess what? I forge those friendships as well. So let me have you call this person and tell them I sent you. That was another way that I overcame. But it was first and foremost by forging genuine friendships where it wasn't just around me selling you something.
Fantastic. So a lot of nuggets for the audience. And at this moment, one of my topic in my company, in the leadership development industry, is the future of work, getting people ready to really strive in what I call like the age of never normal, because I don't think there will be a next normal, a new normal. I think like we need to be able to be resilient and live with constant changes. And at this moment, all industries really are being impacted, transformed under our eyes. So I would love to know what are like those future trends that you are seeing in your industry that will impact, transform, or totally disrupt the industry?
What I would say is going to transform and disrupt is the amount of technology that's centered around commercial real estate. I think what we're going to find is the amount of brokers is probably going to shrink, but those who have specialized skill sets, they're going to be able to capitalize on the amount of technology and continue to stay in commercial real estate and be resilient. But those who don't have that, they're going to go by the wayside, because as we see right now, what you're seeing on the residential side is also happening on the commercial side. We're extremely tight on space. There's very few properties. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times our clients, they can get on and Google stuff and yeah, properties are going to pop up, but a lot of them don't understand the zoning code, or the property actually has liens and citations, or it's part of, say, a bankruptcy or marshal sale. That's where our expertise continues to come in play, because they still need us for that. But if you're one of those brokers that don't know it, yeah, you're going to get replaced by being able to pick up the phone and just say, okay, I need 2,000 square feet of retail space, and call the landlord direct. It's going to be the brokers who can handle things that are much more challenging.
Awesome. Great. And I believe that you are working on owning your expertise in skill set to not become obsolete. And also, Tim, once again, and we can see like through this conversation, you are at the top of your game, you are a star in your industry, which I imagine requires time and work, right? Because this is like the work to be good at what we do. But also you are highly involved in the community. So I would like to know why for you is so important to find the time in a demanding role to give back. And also, what are your criteria when you pick an organization? I believe, like you mentioned, like you need to be passionate, part of what you mentioned, but if there is like other factors, and why is so important for you to be involved in the community?
I know what it was to be a Southern Black kid, where I saw growing up, I would say 95% of African-Americans and Blacks would go to the factory and go to work. And I had these dreams. And I do remember having a few mentors who I would go to their house, who would sit down and they would start to talk to me. And I'd start to find out they had these advanced degrees, really? Or they had these experiences. And then it started to make me dream a little bit more, because at one point I was very hopeless. Here it is, I want to do this. I want to get out of the South. There has to be something different, but I didn't know how. But by watching these gentlemen who, ironically, at the time they were inspiring me, I think I'm that age now. That is why I sat there and I started wanting to get back, because I want to do for someone else what was done for me. The nurturing, the telling, you know, this is the path. no, 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 don't go over there, go over here, and save you some of the war wounds, because I spent a lot of time getting here, but I can possibly accelerate you from here to there by telling you, don't do any of these things in here. This is where the traps are. Then we can get you up there. And then I'm getting to that point where, you know, for my children, for other children that look like me, I want them to sit there and realize some of those dreams that they have, if they're not a football player or a basketball player, you could still accomplish them. And it's actually much easier on the knees.
Fantastic. So, yes.
Now you ask the criteria for how I pick them. It's something I'm absolutely passionate. I do teach some financial literacy classes every now and then, about once a quarter at the Boys and Girls Club, because someone actually did sit me down and teach me. I also, the fact that I like classic cars, love them. It was something, my grandfather restored cars growing up. So guess what? I grew up where there was always a project, two or three, sometimes more, at his house, and they were real, real cars. We have the 57 Chevys, the Impalas. That's something else that I sit there and I get passionate about. That's how I qualify whether I want to be a part of something. And then again, I also look for things where I'm genuinely intrigued by it, but I also know that once I walk in the room, there's probably some high net worth individuals that could also, you know, use my skill set. And it doesn't have to be a lot. It's not the primary focus. 80% of it may be kids, and only two or three people may be high net worth individuals. That's how I qualify. Then there are sometimes where there's absolutely no prospects, but I'm still passionate about it. So I still get up and I still go.
Fantastic. So I saw like different topics coming along in your story. Dreaming big, being inspired, and being an inspiration for others. So we are coming to an end to our time together. And I want to keep on this note of dreaming. You are talented. You've been accomplishing a lot of big dreams. And I believe you have even like bigger dreams for the future. If you could have a superpower, which superpower would it be and why?
It would have to be time travel.
And you will go to the future or to the past?
Honestly, to the past. It becomes complex being a person of color going into the past, but let's take that out of the equation. There are some historical things and things that I'm passionate about, like classic cars, that don't exist anymore. If I could actually see them with my own eye, that's one reason I would like to bounce around or ask car designers, why did you do this? Why did you do it that way? And maybe even some of the car collectors, you know, when you requested this to be made, what was really going through your mind? That would have to be my superpower so that I could get some of those answers.
Awesome. Love it. So on this note of figuring out the secrets of car collection, we are going to end our time together, Tim. And I'm really, really thankful for the time, because I think like you share really great insight and wisdom on going and building something, because a lot of time, and this is what you are doing, there is power in role model, but sometimes you don't have a role model and you still can dream big and bigger. And this is what I'm getting from your story. Thanks also for sharing your sales secret, because not a lot of people are good at sales, but everybody needs this skill. So I really, really appreciate our time together, Tim. Thank you very much.
No, thank you for having me, and it's my absolute pleasure.
And for the audience, so see you next week for another encounter at Glassbreakers Cafe.
If you enjoyed today's episode of Glassbreakers Cafe, please subscribe and share with your friends on social media. Also, be sure to follow me, your host, Cindy Mongeny, on LinkedIn, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. If there is any special guest or special topic you would like us to address, please drop me a note at cindy@newskiesnation.com. Thanks a lot for joining us today. And remember, no one can predict the future, but we still need to prepare for it. See you next week.